KEXP thanks contributing donors and the Real Networks Foundation for supporting Mind Over Matters.
This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Bruce Herbert, President, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment, a company dedicated to socially responsible investing and shareholder advocacy. Bruce and Larry were most recently guests on the sustainability segment in June of 2009 and told us about recent successes of shareholder advocacy in creating positive change in publicly traded corporations. Bruce Herbert and Larry Doors return today to give us an update on progress made since then and to evaluate the accomplishments of shareholder advocacy in this year's 2010 proxy season. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. It's great to be here again.
Would you like to begin by reminding us of the goals of socially responsible investing?
Well, sure. You know, in the past, we've really talked about it as bottom line having to deal with transparency and accountability. And we've said that if there was more of each of those, that almost any issue of environmental, social, or human rights concern would be benefited. I'd like to put it into a little bit more stark terms, perhaps, this year. The reality is that whenever money moves, it has an impact. And unlike a predator drone, the unfortunate outcome is that everything in the vicinity of that impact is harmed. And so there is collateral damage inevitably. Inevitably, whenever we use money in the way that we are doing it today. And so the way that we now want to really have people think about social investment is a near-term and a long-term goal. And now in the near term, we would like for every investor to consider these kinds of considerations in their own investment decision-making. But really, the ultimate long-term goal is for the investments themselves to operate in a way that sustains life and sustains the viability of our being here.
How large a role does socially responsible investing currently play in overall investing?
Well, the Social Investment Forum, which is the industry association for social investing, talks about $1 in nine being invested in some way connected to social goals. But that can be as simple as avoiding tobacco stocks, for instance. There's really a lot more opportunity out there for people who hold progressive values to join the community of those of us who work on these issues. There are a lot more assets under the control of people with progressive values than are being invested with progressive values. So we're hoping to continue to grow the community. It's already a substantial portion, but we have a long way to go.
How does the approach of shareholder advocacy contribute to the goals of socially responsible investing?
Well, it really does have the ability to advance them significantly. Social investment is often described as a stool with three legs. And the one leg of the stool is screening, and that's avoidance. Avoid whatever the screening might be, whether it's nuclear, whether it's tobacco, whether it's military defense contractors. It'll be different for different investors. The second leg is community investment or the microcredit lending, kind of the Grameen Bank model of helping people really where they need it in their hometowns and in their streets. And the third leg of the stool is the shareholder advocacy. Now, those three are not sort of equivalent choices you can pick and choose and have the same impact. They really form more of a hierarchy where the screening is sort of the starting point, but the community investment and the shareholder engagement really are where you can transform the way things are happening on the ground. And so that is the real benefit and impact of the shareholder engagement portion of social investment.
How does the shareholder advocacy process work and who is generally involved?
Well, it works in a fairly straightforward way. The rules are set forward by the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the rule is that anyone who owns $2,000 worth of stock, and that's dollars, not shares, and has owned that for a year by the time of the filing deadline, can file a shareholder proposal. And of course, there are regulations that shape the content and the size and the scope and so forth of those proposals. So most anyone could file a shareholder proposal. Now, that's just the logistics of it. Now, the reality of it is that companies challenge shareholder proposals, and if you are an individual trying to do it, expect to get a sort of legal dossier challenging your proposal and that you'll have to defend and so forth before the SEC. So companies go to great lengths to try and exclude proposals. So the law and the practice then become very different in terms of one's ability to be effective. Now, that's changing in some ways that we're excited about, and we'll talk about perhaps more a little bit later. But the people who are involved, it's really been a spectrum of people, and it's been increasing over time. Kind of reminds me of the lovely sentiment of Martin Luther King that the moral arc of history is long, but it trends towards justice. And so it started with the faith communities back in the 1920s, decided to screen their portfolios, and then socially concerned individuals got involved, and now the social investment movement got started about 40 years ago, really the modern era of it. Mutual funds are now involved, and then institutional investors like your pension funds, your state and city employment funds. And so now it is actually coming into the mainstream, where virtually any mainstream entity will offer something that they call socially responsible investment. Now, there are some distinctions. Usually that will only involve screening, will not involve community investment or advocacy. So we still have to apply the principle of caveat emptor, buyer beware.
Which issues or topics have been most prominent during the 2010 proxy season?
Well, we usually divide things up into three different categories: corporate governance, environment, and human rights. And on the corporate governance side, it had to do with the way in which companies count and report votes in shareholder elections. Also, the transparency of political activity by companies and a rising number of efforts to limit or expose excessive executive pay. And then things like majority votes in order to be elected as a board member. On the environment, issues of energy efficiency, greenhouse gas reports, and setting greenhouse gas targets. Also the issue of fracking, which has to do with drawing natural gas out of wells. That has a lot of long-term environmental risks, as do the Canadian tar sands and the production in those areas. And then on human rights, there were, again, we co-filed a couple of resolutions at Chevron on revenue transparency so that they report what they pay to some of the many corrupt partners that they have around the world, and also how they choose where not to do business. And then there were some discussions around whether water is a human right, and those were proposed at big water-using companies, and more human rights policies and human rights committees. So those were kind of the key issues this year.
Would you go into some detail about what has developed during the 2010 proxy season in regard to shareholder rights?
Well, we had a very interesting experience because Plum Creek Timber, that's based here in Seattle, in the past was counting votes in a way that was extremely disadvantageous to shareholders and shareholder proposals, where they were taking the yes votes, the votes in favor of a shareholder proposal, and dividing them by the yes votes, the no votes, the abstentions, and then what are called broker non-votes, where brokers don't have instructions from the owners of the shares as to how to vote. And that can be a huge volume of votes.
Often is the majority of the votes, actually.
And management was counting each of those as being in support of management. So it was very much an uphill battle, and we had a couple of cases of majority votes using the vote counting method that the Securities and Exchange Commission uses for the purpose of deciding whether you've reached the threshold to resubmit that resolution. So using the SEC's method, we got majority votes, and they reported them as having failed when they reported out to the press and to fellow shareholders.
And two votes in particular that we put forward, and who knows about other ones, but one was a 52.9% vote that was reported as only 6%. Another one just last year was a 56-point-something percent vote, a majority vote that was reported out to shareholders and the press as being only 39%. And so it really is the management who already has the deck stacked in their favor, leaning with their elbow on the scale of voter democracy and voter rights.
So we presented a resolution asking that the SEC vote counting method be the vote counting method at Plum Creek. And more than a quarter of the shareholders joined us in supporting that, which for a first-year resolution was excellent. And in fact, we're seeing it sort of spreading within the movement, people really looking at developing a uniform vote counting method, because at this point it is not uniform. And in their bylaws, companies can kind of set the situation however they like. So we're hopeful that we can work with the SEC itself to set a uniform standard. But in the meantime, we'll be refiling our resolution at Plum Creek, continuing to dialogue with management to encourage them to do the right thing. And I think across the industry, there's going to be more of these resolutions at other companies. One thing that's worth noting is Massey Energy, the coal mine company that owns the mine where 29 miners died in April, did exactly the same thing as Plum Creek and voted that a greenhouse gas emissions resolution received less than 37% of the vote. When you use the SEC vote counting method, it received a majority 54% vote. So this is another example of, in that case, a very bad management really skewing vote counting in its own favor.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Bruce Herbert, President, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment. Our topic is shareholder advocacy and progress made toward creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during the 2010 proxy season. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. How does current financial reform legislation before Congress, how is it likely to affect the rights of shareholders?
Well, first of all, we have to be really aware that this legislation still has to go through conference, and they have to bring together the Senate and the House bills, and often in conference, things can change quickly and dramatically, so we have to keep that in mind. There are some really good aspects to this new legislation, granting shareholders more access to the proxy, better opportunities to get rid of poor performing directors and to nominate their own candidates. Also, it would give shareholders a say on pay at all U.S. publicly traded companies, and that's something that through the shareholder resolution process we've been engaged in for a long time. There are still some holes in it, and I think all of us here in the state of Washington can be grateful to Maria Cantwell. She's on the banking committee. She's worked very hard to try and close these loopholes, and to be frank, she hasn't been successful yet, but she still feels as though it's possible in conference. And the real issue has to do with the trading of derivatives, you know, which are these very complex kind of mechanisms that are relatively unregulated, and that's where a lot of the marketplace trouble that we've had in the last couple of years really came from. So she kind of feels as though we've set up a process for responding next time we have a crisis, but we haven't really dealt with the heart of the crisis, and that is to get banks to stop gambling with depositors' money, remembering that deposits are insured by the federal government. So you create a situation where these bankers, the downside risk is handled by taxpayers. And when that's the case, we need them to be very conservative and prudent and not out there betting on derivatives that they may not understand.
Yeah, it's really true that it was a wonderful opportunity for a re-regulation of the marketplace, and a marketplace that had been characterized by very important and reasonable regulation that was piece-by-piece dismantled, you know, really since the Reagan era.
What progress has been made during 2010 in improving corporate governance?
Well, there are really a lot of corporate governance issues out there, and many of them have received great support from shareholders. This is an area where there have been a lot of majority votes. One thing that took place in the last year is that we reached agreement, this is Newground, in fact, with both Microsoft and Starbucks, on the transparency of political activity. And, you know, this is not just being transparent about contributions to candidates, but it's very important to also be transparent about payments to trade associations. And people may be familiar with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which bundles tens of millions of dollars in every election cycle and enters those into the political realm, often with very little transparency whatsoever. And what happens is companies often make very large payments to those associations, and then the money is kind of laundered into the political system, and you don't really find out who's behind it. Who are the companies that are making these payments? So in the case of both Microsoft and Starbucks, and in fact now 50 of the S&P 100 largest companies, have now adopted this kind of transparency that also includes being transparent about the political activities of the associations that they're part of.
And that's the really important part, because when money is given to an association, then no one knows where it came from. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which has been much in the news in the last year, it's something on the order of magnitude of 15 of their members contribute 85% of their entire budget, multiple millions of dollars. And that goes into TV attack ads. It goes into all kinds of things that no one knows who really gave that money. And what it does is it sets up a double jeopardy where companies that want to appear one way in the media and to their shareholders will have very forward-thinking and progressive-looking policies, but then they'll be funneling money secretly through an entity like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that will go into political means that will fight that same policy. So it can be detrimental. Sometimes companies do this knowingly, but many times it might be unwitting. And so that's why for us to ask companies to ask their trade associations what portion of our payments are not deductible, because that tells you what portion are then being used for political purposes. And it's incumbent upon management, since they're spending shareholder dollars, to let shareholders know how these monies are being used.
To what extent has shareholder advocacy helped influence corporations to address climate change during the 2010 proxy season?
Well, this year it was a record with 95 climate change-related resolutions being filed, and that's a 40% increase over last year. And the Securities and Exchange Commission approved a new rule that calls for greater disclosure by companies regarding greenhouse gas emissions. Now, that rule only came into play in February, and so it's kind of going to be next year where we begin to see these reports. But that's a very important step. We also had a proposal at the TJX companies, they own TJ Maxx and a number of other stores, talking about asking for a report from management to shareholders on the energy efficiency of their built environment, you know, the big box stores and that sort of thing. And there are increasing efforts, I think, to look at that because, as the Energy Secretary Chu says, that's not just low-hanging fruit. That's fruit that's already fallen on the ground. All you have to do is bend over and pick it up. It's really the easiest way to reduce our energy use is to focus on our existing built environment. So we expect to see quite a lot of that going forward. And I have to say, in the case of TJX stores, the first time that we had a conference call to engage in dialogue with them, they brought one of their members of the board of directors into that call. That's very unusual, and it's a great sign because oftentimes management tries to keep shareholders well away from the board of directors. So it was a good sign, and in fact, we reached an agreement with TJX so that we were able to withdraw that resolution.
Overall, how did climate change shareholder resolutions fare in 2010?
They did quite well, you know, about the same as last year, and that was a record high support last year. So it's not as though it continued rocketing higher, but it's at a very high level of support now. People recognize that these issues have long-term financial impacts on shareholders, and that's why they support these sort of votes.
Overall, how well have companies responded to shareholder concerns during 2010?
That's an interesting question. There's always a spectrum, and we might talk about some of the laggards a little bit later. But in general, the last couple of years, I think in part because the financial meltdown, companies have been eager, generally speaking, to be a little more responsive to shareholders. Certainly our own experience this year was across the board, with one notable exception, you know, quite positive and quite beneficial. We had the experience with TJX of not even going to a proxy vote, of being withdrawn. Likewise with Microsoft. And then Starbucks, you know, that came to conclusion. It started last year, but came to conclusion in this year. Now, there's some notable laggards that didn't fall in that way. But overall, I would say that we and our colleagues would say that companies have been a little more responsive this year than general.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Bruce Herbert, President, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment. Our topic is shareholder advocacy and progress made toward creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during the 2010 proxy season. Which companies have stood out as being leaders in making positive change in response to shareholder advocacy during 2010? You've alluded to some that have certainly been positive.
Yeah, I mean, both TJX and Microsoft and Starbucks as well, in our own experience, were very easy to work with, and we had nice positive outcomes. Another 70 companies have also given shareholders a say on pay this year, so that's some very positive progressive movement. A cynic might say, well, you know, say on pay is likely coming down the line in legislation, so they're slightly getting out in front of the parade. But nonetheless, you know, it is a good sign when companies take steps on their own ahead of being required to do so by law.
Which companies have stood out as being laggards in making positive change in response to shareholder advocacy during 2010?
Well, Boeing this year was interesting. We've been in conversation with them off and on, and you might recall that we were talking to them about the issue about political disclosure and the payments to trade associations. And in a moment of rare candor in a year past, they said, we just don't have the stomach for this kind of disclosure. This year, they called us. They initiated a call to us, and it seemed like there might be some positive momentum building. But in the final analysis, they still weren't willing to make movement on this disclosure of trade association payments. Chevron is probably the standout, in terms of corporate laggards, certainly in our experience, and it might be, well, the shared experience or opinion of the social investment movement at large. Larry has dealt directly with them in person and on the phone, so I might let him say a word about that.
Well, it's very unfortunate, and as somebody who's worked on human rights for many years, I always point out that Chevron is to human rights what ExxonMobil is to climate change. You know, they are the worst actor, and we own some shares for advocacy purposes, but I don't pass any of my money over to the Chevron Corporation. This year, their meeting was just about 2 weeks ago, and they kept 20 people with legal proxies who had the legal right to enter the annual meeting and speak on behalf of shareholders. They kept 20 people outside. They had a big old clock ticking right in front of everybody and would cut the microphone off at will during both the question and answer session and during the presentations of shareholder resolutions. And the fact is, they are afraid for shareholders and the board of directors to hear from other shareholders. And when there's that kind of fear, it makes one wonder about the long-term investment viability of the company. So there's no question. Chevron is certainly among the very, very worst companies in terms of its relationship with shareholders.
What have been some of the most significant shareholder votes during the 2010 proxy season?
You know, I mentioned the fracking, and fracking is when companies inject water and some chemicals into the ground in order to force the natural gas up from natural gas wells. This is the first year that we had resolutions calling for a report to shareholders on the long-term risks, because we don't even know what they're injecting into the ground. And you can imagine the long-term liabilities if you're harming the water tables in the areas where these natural gas wells are located. So first-year resolutions at ExxonMobil got more than 26%, at Williams Company 42% for a first-year resolution. And I think that that is something that obviously is going to give management pause, and they're going to think very hard. Because let's remember, who is going to pay the price for long-term liabilities? It's long-term shareholders. It is not management, right? Management gets paid today. Long-term shareholders are carrying the risk 5 years, 10 years down the line. So I think that these were very, very significant votes first time out, and management cannot ignore votes like this.
And to put that into context, a 24% vote, which is what we got at Amazon, by the way, in addition, is 8 times higher than the SEC threshold for automatic resubmission of a first-year resolution. So the SEC has a framework that they've created understanding the demographics of voting, and understanding that the majority of votes often are under direct or indirect control of management, or in some cases still founding families, and then a large number of votes of shares simply don't vote at all. And so when those who are both informed and independent vote in favor of a resolution, according to the SEC rules, if it's only 3%, that's considered a significant portion when you consider what's independent and informed.
What do you consider the greatest successes during the 2010 proxy season?
Well, actually, one of our own was very successful, and that's the work with McDonald's. They moved forward on a very important disclosure around environmental issues and the use of pesticides in their supply chain in North America. And the strategy, of course, with that, we asked them about how much pesticide was in use, and they first said, well, we don't know. That's a supplier issue. You know, the people who bring the potatoes to us, that's their concern, not ours. And we were able to impress on them that, I think Larry's quote I love, is that, you know, whenever McDonald's and pesticides and French fries are used in the same paragraph, it's not good for our company. And so the company decided to inaugurate an investigation, and it was very gratifying that every month or two they would call us up and say, well, we're actually ready to go on to the next step. Would you mind if we sped up the time frame that we originally agreed to? And of course, once they start to look at that, they're recognizing economies of scale and benefits financially as well as health benefits. And then they will take that into other products that they carry. And of course, any two other categories that will be important is anyone who competes with McDonald's, seeing what they're doing, will have to then follow suit. And any supplier that ever hopes to sell product to McDonald's, even if they're not now and not required to do what McDonald's is asking of their potato suppliers, for instance, they will have to clean up their acts in order to even be able to darken the door and put in a proposal.
What direction is shareholder advocacy likely to take during the 2011 proxy season?
Well, Larry has some comments, I think, on the specific issues, but I think that because of the economic meltdown, because of what's happening in the Gulf with the BP oil spill and the geyser underneath the Gulf and the tremendous destruction that's happening there, it's just awakening more and more people to the knowledge that, going back to the first question, whenever money moves, it has an impact. And is that impact happening in a way that's consistent with what we want to see for ourselves and our children and grandchildren and the life around us? So we see a larger participation, and there's some reasons, some logistical or mechanistic reasons why that's true as well, is that heretofore, I mentioned how difficult it's been for individuals to be involved, not because of the logistics, but because of the practice of companies challenging at the SEC and all that kind of thing. Well, there now are some new entities at play in the field. One is called MoxiVote, that is allowing individuals to aggregate their votes. And right now, they're getting information as to how large institutional shareholders or advocacy groups are voting so that they can vote similarly and not have to, you know, be burdened with a whole raft of research on every particular item or issue. But the momentum toward that is actually then being able to assign their proxy so that the shareholder can have their votes cast just in the way that Sierra Club does, for instance, or, you know, Newground or any of the other organizations that are participants.
Yeah, I mean, I think the 2011 proxy season is going to be greatly influenced by the legislation when it comes out. And so some of the things that we as a community have been pushing for, you know, again, majority votes to be elected to the board, which doesn't seem like such a big deal, and yet many companies have fought it. Say on pay issues, which again, the community has been pushing for many years. These are the sorts of things that are likely to be in law in the 2011 season. And it may, in fact, free up some of the capacity of the social investment movement to move on to other issues such as fracking or coal combustion waste or some of the long-term environmental issues that we have.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, two things. One is that coming together and working community, we have an opportunity that we just don't have working as individuals. But in larger picture, you know, we're on this world too short of time to have a real disconnect between our values and our investments. And so if your listeners love their grandchildren, they should invest as if those grandchildren's future mattered. And if they love the environment, they should invest as if the wanton destruction of land and life forms mattered, like what we're seeing in the Gulf. And if by chance anyone listening to this broadcast loves money more than anything else, they should still invest in a socially responsible manner so that there will be something of worth left to spend your money on.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Terrific. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have just been listening to Bruce Herbert, President, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment. For more information, check on the web at www.newground.net and also sriadvocacy.org. Again, that's newground.net and sriadvocacy.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.